Canto 18. When my exalted teacher reached the end of his discourse, he looked me in the face intently, with a gaze that did not bend, to see if I was satisfied. The place of my last thirst, in fact, was full again with yet another, but I held my peace, saying within myself, "It could be when I ask him all these questions without cease it troubles him." And then I said aloud, "Master, my vision, quickened by your light, sees all your words with clarity endowed. I pray, therefore, dear Father, that you might explain love to me. Love to which, you say, good actions are reduced, and equally their opposites." And he, "Direct the way to me, the eyesight, keen as it may be, of all your understanding. Plain as day, the error will strike you about the blind who would be guides. Created to be quick in love, it's quickly moved the mind towards all pleasures. By the merest flick of pleasure, it is whipped to action. Your perception takes in from the world outside a sense impression, which it holds before your mind and spreads out both long and wide, so that the mind turns to it. If, so turned, the mind inclines that way, then we must call that inclination love. It is not learned. It's instinct, to be reinforced by all the pleasures you might have. For just as fire moves upwards, as a form that's born to climb to where it most thrives, so into desire the mind thus seized must enter at the time of being taken. For desire moves as the spirit moves it, and may never rest until the thing it loves it truly has in its possession, and so finds the crest of joy. Now you may see how truth's concealed for those who say that all love merits praise just for itself. Its matter stands revealed as good, they think. But here their judgment plays a trick. Because the wax might well be good, that is, the instinct, and the stamp be bad, which is the thing loved. My wits have understood your words. Some of the questions that I had about love's nature are now answered. Yet perplexity increases. For if love is offered us as something we might get from outside, and the soul's not thinking of which foot should fall, but sets foot as it must, there is no merit in which way it goes, crooked or straight. Thus I to him. He. Just as far as reason sees can I disclose the truth to you. Beyond there you must wait for Beatrice, who deals in faith. In men, as in all things, there lies within, innate, an essence, the substantial form. Again, this form, for man, it bears the name of soul, is both united with and yet distinct from matter, which it keeps within a whole specific virtue which is tightly linked to its own action and is not perceived or demonstrated save by its effect, as is the first life in a plant green-leaved. It follows that the human intellect can't have the first idea of how we know about our first ideas and how they came to us, or how desire finds objects so alluring. They're inside you, just the same as the honey-making urge is in the bees. Nor does the primal, central will admit earning of praise or moral penalties, so that your wishes may conform to it. The balance, that is, to your natural urge. There is innate in you to hold the fort, a faculty of counsel, thus to merge the two against a yielding. This we ought to call the principle in which is found the merit of your reason, by how well it gathers in our loves from sky to ground, and winnows out the guilt from grain that fell too smoothly to the sickle. Those who went in reason to the roots, the ancient Greeks, unearthed the freedom, realized what it meant, and gave us the great texts in which it speaks. They gave us ethics, clear proofs that though each and every love you burn with must arise out of necessity, the power to reach and guide it is in you. This is the prize, whose endless value Beatrice will teach you of, the noble faculty, free will. Have it in mind, because the chances are she'll speak of it to you there on the hill. The moon was late, and we had come this far without it. It was almost midnight. There it was, to make the stars look scarcer. Like a fiery bucket, it moved through the air, its course on those tracks that the sun will strike when, seen from Rome, it plunges down between Sardinia and Corsica. That shade by whose great books Pietola had been honored above all Mantua had laid his head down. I had heard him well. Yes, I, replete with his informed and clear discourse, rambled in drowsiness, but by and by half sleep was torn awake with sudden force. Some people had come round behind our backs, and as Ismenus and Asopus saw the troops of tumult and the mock attacks along the bank at night when Thebes would roar and prance for Bacchus, so I saw them come around that circle, but with something more to celebrate. For I could tell the drum that drove them was no pagan pulse of blood, but goodwill, and just love. And soon they were upon us, all these runners, like a flood, and two in front cried out in tears, "Praise her! Praise Mary, hastening to the hill!" And this, "Caesar made speed to Spain!" And in the rear the rest cried, "Go, go! It would come amiss to lose time for too little love. We cheer for zeal in grand deeds that bring back to life the green of God's grace." Then my leader said, "You people, in whom fervor runs so rife to wake, maybe what you have left half dead, through lack of will, delay, and negligence, this man who stands here, it's the truth I speak, before the morning sunshine would commence again, would go up, give us what we seek, show us the gap." At which one of that band said, "Follow us, and you will find the break. We need to move, you have to understand. We may not rest. Excuse us if you take our penance for rebuff. I, at one time, was abbot of San Zeno, in the days when Barbarossa ruled Verona. I'm aware Milan still loathes him, but he stays revered where I lived, and there is one there now, Alberto, who has one foot in the grave and must soon shed tears on account of how his monastery is run. No throne will save that lord of grief from using power there in those cloisters, and because he let his son, warped in the body, worse in the mind, to wear the abbot's cowl, a basely born wanton in place of the true shepherd." I don't know if he said more, or else fell silent, as already he had run to pass us so. But thus I heard, and in my mind it has remained. And he that was my help said, "Turn around here. See the two that bear in wrath their teeth while they tell lessons all should learn about historic instances of sloth." They came behind the rest, and as they came they said, "The sea was opened, but they failed to get back to Jordan all the same." They must have meant the Hebrews. And "they sailed as far as Sicily, but had no thirst for more horizons, and Aeneas left without them. Thus they lived on, and were cursed with lack of glory, of all fame bereft." Then, when these shades were gone so far from us, we couldn't see them, a new thought was born within me that I needed to discuss, and then another, and my mind was torn in all directions, like a tumbling stream. My eyes closed, and my thoughts turned to a dream.